Quinnell, reel 5.
What was the purpose of this period that you spent at St. Martin's Plain? Why were you there?
There was always a threat of invasion. And
you were told that there was, were you?
Yes.
Yes. On
several occasions, on several occasions we were, the alarm was given, and we fall in rapidly, and we were marched to defensive places on the cliffs of the surrounding hills of Folkestone, and also very adjacent to Folkestone Harbour, because Folkestone Harbour and Dover Harbour were vulnerable points. They were very close to the continent.
What sort of things would you do when you were called out on occasions like this?
You'd be marched I remember one pouring wet night, we were marched to the hills outside Folkestone, overlooking the channel, and there we stood and waited and waited and waited. And when it was dawn, we were marched back to our tents again. We'd seen nothing and we'd heard nothing, but there it was.
Did anything eventful ever happen on any of these occasions?
No.
No.
But we were there in case it did. Another thing there, we were, I think there were 8 of us all told, went to the Hythe Ranges to have a course of musketry. We were there for a week, and we had intensive training, loading, unloading, and above all, we had rapid fire. We learned rapid fire, getting up 10 rounds, and getting those 10 rounds onto the target too, no good of poking them off anywhere, 10 rounds in 1 minute. It was known as the Mad Minute.
Did bayonet training get any attention?
No.
It didn't?
Not there.
Right. Now, the final episode before you went to France in 1915 was your move from Colchester...
No, move from Folkestone.
Your move from Folkestone to Aldershot.
115 miles.
In the spring of 1915.
Yeah.
How did you get there exactly? What was it?
We marched 115 miles.
What do you remember about the march?
Hmm?
What do you remember about the journey?
Well, we were not issued with 150 rounds of ammunition, but we were given 2 4-pound weights, which we had to carry here in the front to counterbalance the pack. Each day, a small billeting party consisting of an officer and what perhaps 4 men. Or NCO, your junior NCOs, would ride on bicycles in advance to the battalion. And they would call it, they would know where our halting place was. For example, Ashford was our first night. And the officer and the billeting party would call it private houses, cottages, anywhere. Schools would be a favourite, mission halls and such so forth would be favourites, but with the vast majority it was private houses. And they would look at the house and they'd say, 6 men come in here tonight, 10 men come in here, and so on and so on. They would have a list, each man would have a list of perhaps 250. You got to billet 250 men. And as you go, there's 6 there, there's 10 there, and so he was, until he got to his 250.
When you were billeted in private houses, did the householders feed you?
They welcomed us, and there would be early next morning. Our reveille would be at 6 o'clock, but they would come down and make us a cup of tea to start off with, and. They really made a fuss of us.
What were the highlights of that journey, as far as you were concerned?
As far as I can remember, we were one day we were on the march, and we were told, we got the order, march to attention, which means that you carry your rifle at a slope and you straighten your back and you stride out and you swing your right free arm, your right arm. And Lord Kitchener sat on his horse with his aide-de-camp on a high bank, looking down at us. And what a fine figure of a man he was. And we got a kick out of that,
mm-hmm.
to think that we'd seen Lord Kitchener.
Yes, yes.
And then each night, it took us 5 days. I always remember on the last day, the fifth day, we were marching over the Hog's Back in Surrey. And we had a halt right on top of the Hog's Back. You know the Hog's Back?
Mm-hmm.
And the sergeant, who'd been at Aldershot before, walked across to the other side of the road, and there you had a grandstand view of Aldershot. And he beckoned to us, come over here, boys. We went to the other side of the road. He said, Aldershot, the holy city.
Yes. Well, when you actually got to Aldershot, did you find it a holy city?
It was far from holy.
How did you like it?
We hated it. But I will say this, that at Aldershot, we were there, I think it would be in the neighbourhood of about 2 months. And the training we got there was divisional training.
Just before we go on to training, I'm just interested to know why you hated Aldershot.
Well, there was only one place to go at Aldershot, because that is the home of the British Army. And there's nothing else but barracks, barracks, barracks. And if you went down into the town, every place was crowded with nothing else but soldiers, soldiers, soldiers. And the place seemed to swarm with red caps, military police.
Mm-hmm.
And the military police there, they were very, very strict indeed. And the Aldershot was also the home of the Glass House, which was the military prison. And if anybody was unfortunate enough to be put into the Glass House, they never came out of there the same man.
As far as you were concerned, with the men you arrived at Aldershot with, did you have any problems or difficulties while you're there as regards things like food and accommodation?
We were, our particular company, the most of the battalion were in army huts. Wooden huts which had been erected in the South African War. This would be the spring of 1915, and these huts had been erected during the South African War. Now they were very comfortable. They were similar in construction to barrack rooms, single story, of course. But my particular company were billeted in married quarters in North Camp, in Aldershot. And we were quite comfortable. We had one section that's about 16 men to each floor of, that would be two rooms. But we were quite comfortable there.
I see. You weren't overcrowded or anything?
Hmm?
You weren't overcrowded?
No, we weren't overcrowded.
Okay. Now, the training you had at Aldershot, that consisted mainly of training in large formations as opposed to individual training. Yes. Well, what did it consist of exactly?
Well, it consisted of divisional training. You see, we are now in the 12th Division, and our emblem was the Ace of Spades. Now, when you train as a 12th Division, you're one little cog in a big wheel. The divisional training is 12 battalions. That's roughly 12,000 men are on the move, and you have to have a very large area to train on.
Mm.
And we train on Yateley Flats, which is a large, wild bit of country, part wooded, part brush, part open country. Mm. And you're a very small cog in a big wheel.
What did it actually feel like to be a small part of this great big operation? Did you know what was going on?
No. You knew what was going on, that was within your vision. Beyond that, you hadn't got a clue.
Mm.
And you'd get orders to line that hedge a quarter of a mile away. Get down on that sunken road. And you'd carry out your orders. Mm.
Tell me that story that you related last time, that you heard from a chap you met when you were on holiday, who was in the Mons Retreat, because I think you compared your feelings doing these divisional training operations with the feelings of people like himself who were out in France during the Mons
Retreat. Well, this chap was in the 1st Battalion Middlesex Regiment, and I got into conversation with him. And I said, "You were at Monsville, weren't you?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "What was it like?" He said, "Well, when we landed in the latter part of August 14 at Boulogne. And he said, from there onwards, it was March, March, March. It was a beautiful weather, very warm. He said, every village and town we went through, people rushed out. Bottles of wine, yards of French bread, flowers. But he said, March, 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 day after day. He said, the hardest part about it was that you never got a real night's sleep because when you halted, it was a case of mess orderlies or you so-and-so, you're on sentry tonight. And so you had a broken night's rest. He said, the next morning, away you'd go again. He said, one evening, just before dusk, we were ordered to line a hedge and put up a bit of head cover. Well, that the first time we'd had this order, put up a bit of head cover, so we got our entrenching tools out and dug a bit and put up a head cover. He said, and then we just flopped down there. He said, I went fast asleep. Just before dawn, we had our baptism of fire. The Germans were shelling us. And they got the range of this hedge, and the shells began to fall in front of the hedge or behind the hedge. One fell on my left, one fell on my right. Just before it became daylight, the sergeant came running along. Get back to that sunken road, the other side of the field there. He said, I went to shake my pal up on my left, dead. Pal on my right, dead. There was nothing I could do about it. He said, so I doubled back to this sunken road. Before long, we were marching away. He said, but we're in reverse now. He said, we're getting away from the front line. He said, no bottles of wine, no yards of bread came out for us, and our cook got lost.
Mm-hmm.
We lost the cook carts. He said, it became, if we were passing a field of carrots, he said, we used to raid the field and dig up a few carrots and walk along munching the carrots and turnips. He said, after about a week of this, he said, I happened to get hold of an English paper. He said, and I found I'd been at Mons. He said, I didn't know I was at Mons.
And it felt rather like that when you were trudging around Yetley Plain.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, why
did you ever hear that call, officers come if you please? On the bugle.
No.
Yeah. Oh, well, on manoeuvres, the day is over as far as Tommy is concerned. You know that the officers are going to get their so-and-so's chewed off by the general, you see. Mm. And they always used to come back looking crestfallen, we ought to have done this, we ought to have done that. But that's just how it was, even in action.
Mm.
Even in action in France. You only knew what was going on within your vision.
Mm. Another thing which you did while you were at Aldershot was that you had a barbed wire course.
Yes.
And I'm very interested in hearing about the methods that you were taught in wiring. Could you give me some details on that?
Well, now, barbed wiring is teamwork. Now, in the early part of the war, you used wooden stakes. And you had a very heavy wooden mallet. Well, we found that in France it was a very dicey thing going out driving stakes into the ground. The Germans would immediately open up with their machine gun. But then screw posts. Now that's iron post about 4 feet long, and they were twist. There was a twist on, like a thread, on them, and they would screw into the ground without any noise at all. They simply screw until about 3 feet was standing above ground.
Mm-hmm.
Now as far as the actual barbed wiring is concerned, the man who does the manoeuvring of the barbed wire was issued with a pair of very thick leather gloves. But the two key men are the two men who were carrying the coil of barbed wire, which was on a wooden framework, and there was a hole through this wooden framework. We used to put a pole through, one man at each end on the other side of the barbed wire.